on this episode of Animation Deliberation, we're doing our follow-up episode on Masters of the Universe Revelation, a very much talked about show that just dropped on Netflix July 23rd. We're going to provide additional thoughts right after some ads we have no control over. Once again, Skeletor and the forces of Snake Mountain are taking over. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have fun timestamping that.
Welcome back, folks. It's Animation Deliberation, the podcast where we take action, animation, and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And I feel like that's an especial caveat that we might have to provide for this particular series we're covering. But before I get ahead of myself, let me introduce my co-host today. I have Zuhair Ali, my regular co-host. What's going on, Zuhair? How are you?
Hello, hello. I'm doing good. I'm glad that I didn't hop on the Primer episode and got to listen to it because it gave me the context I needed. And yeah, I'm here to give my thoughts.
Right on, right on. Also joining us is Matthew Fox of the Star Wars Universe podcast, as well as the Superhero Ethics podcast. I've been hopping on that podcast to do a few episodes of coverage for Bad Batch, so wonderful to get their voice on the podcast. How are you, Matthew? Thanks for being
here. I'm good. I'm looking forward to having a conversation and not having to edit it, so this is perfect for me.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we talked a little bit about that Primer episode that I did, and I did an instant reaction with the guys that hopped on that episode with me for the Primer episode, Dale Morris and Brian V. Klein. So I really want to use this episode as an opportunity, first and foremost, you know, for you guys, or for you to give your thoughts, as well as some of your familiarity with Masters of the Universe. So right off the bat, Matthew, why don't you tell us about some of your history with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, and then you can kind of dovetail that into your initial impressions of Masters of the Universe Revelation.
So I'm very much in the age range that the show was aimed for. I was I'm born in 1977. I think the show came out in 83. As a young kid, I watched quite a lot of it. So I'm right about the age that the show was aimed at. I was born in 77, so in the early 80s, I was a young kid. And I thought the show was a lot of fun. I mean, I watched it when I was like 6, 7, 8, 9. I wasn't having deep analysis of it. I don't think I remembered much. I wasn't the sort of fan who, like, kept up with it and 10 years later was collecting the figures and talking to people. It was a fun show for my childhood.
Sure.
And I went on kind of a journey with it because the first thing that got me thinking about this universe that I hadn't really thought about probably in 25 years was when the She-Ra remake was made. And
okay.
I'm not someone who likes seeing everything be remade. I'm kind of anti. Like, I think if you have a really interesting new take on something, then give us that new take on something. But it does feel like a lot of stuff gets remade just to cash in on nostalgia, which I'm not a big fan of.
Sure.
And I was very sort of raised eyebrow about She-Ra. And to this date, I think what they did with She-Ra is one of the best remakes I've ever seen in terms of taking the original property, having a very fresh, unique spin on it, really doing some great things with it. So I was very excited when I then heard that Kevin Smith was going to do Masters of the Universe because I love Kevin Smith. And I was like, oh, cool. Okay, well, that sounds awesome, especially if it's in the same shared universe. It turns out it wasn't going to be, which I was definitely disappointed by, but I was still kind of open to.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like this, I wanted a new, fresh take on Masters of the Universe. And I felt like what I got was Kevin Smith pulling his Masters of the Universe toys off the shelf and getting to play with them and while we all watched. And I can see that there being some fun to that, but I definitely, there were some parts of this that I definitely enjoyed. I loved episode 2. I thought episode 2, 3, and 4 were a lot better than episode 1 and 5.
Okay.
And I will certainly say right off the bat, I kind of feel like the way my friend Paul often feels when he talks about Last Jedi, where he definitely didn't like Last Jedi, but he also stands completely against all the racist, misogynistic idiots who don't like it. There are people who are critiquing this because there's not enough He-Man or anything like that. Honestly, that was one of my favorite parts. I loved that they called it Masters of the Universe, and then mostly it wasn't He-Man. And I'll get into that in a bit, because I thought that was a really good thing. But I still think there's a lot of... I think mostly I just thought it was pretty boring. Like, there was a couple of creative decisions that I really didn't like, but episode two really kind of made it seem like we might be getting this very interesting kind of what's the Masters of the Universe world like after He-Man and Skeletor, especially with it being, like, mostly Teela and Eva Lyn.
Sure.
And then it became more like just getting the band back together. And then there was a completely manipulative, unnecessary character death that really upset me, and it was actually why Paul stopped watching. I think I've heard from other people who stopped watching at that death. And then episode five was like, oh, actually, wait, never mind. Everything's back to normal. And at which point I just said, well, then why did you waste my time making me watch this if nothing really happened?
Sure, sure. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on and do this episode in the first place, because I kind of talked about in the opening of the episode... This has been a pretty controversial series in terms of its reception. And you talked a little bit about the comparisons to Last Jedi, but it is similar in that regard, that there are some valid criticisms in there, but they are very much a small voice in a cacophony of complaints that are just not valid at all. We can talk all about that. But I just did want to remind people, like, the show is called Animation Deliberation. So as much as it is a celebration of our favorite action animated series, it's also a conversation. And myself, BVK, and Dale, we were all pretty positive on the series. So it's nice to, you know, hear somebody else's perspective. And you have that, you know, nostalgia factor there. And it didn't work for you in a lot of ways that are valid. But we will continue to get all into that. But Zuhair, why don't you tell us a little bit about your familiarity with Masters of the Universe? It sounded like, you know, talking about the Primer episode that you listened to, that you kind of went in similar to me, not knowing anything at all. So I'll be interested to hear what you thought of the series as well as just a fan of action animation.
Yeah, I think my statement is about to be the complete opposite of Matthew's.
Go for it. Go for it.
Because I went in... not remembering the show. Like, I remember that Masters of the Universe was a thing.
Sure.
And, like, now, like, I was kind of looking it up. I was like, were there other renditions of this? And I guess there was one in 2002. I was born in the early 90s, so maybe that was the one that I watched.
More than likely, yeah.
But I guess I didn't, like, watch it enough to even remember anyone's names. Like, I remembered He-Man and I remembered Skeletor, and there's been a lot of Skeletor memes lately, so it's like, oh, that was from that He-Man thing back in the day. So I did go into this blind. It was why I told Jay Scotty, like, don't put me in the Primer, because I really don't know, and I will be sitting there as that dude of like, who's this? What's this? What are you talking about? Like, no, I want to listen to it. Right. And I'm glad that I did, because when I was watching this episode, there was a couple of names and stuff that came up, like Mossman. If I heard that without any context, I'd been like, this is a dude named Mossman? Like, this is a dude named He-Man. It wouldn't have really thrown me off, but I had enough context to be like, oh, okay, this is actually somebody important. He's, like, relevant to this. And
yeah. Mossman the name Mossman doesn't really have the subtlety of something like Evil Lyn, for example.
Sure. Yeah. Which, that took me a second, too. I was like, wait, did I hear that right? Her name is Eva Lyn? Like, that's clever. My pun side loves that. But I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, these aren't the most creative names out there. We've got Cringer and Battle Cat. Those are pretty self-explanatory, too. So
yeah, it's silly. I love it. I could see somebody growing up with it. Just like, it's easy to relate to the name. So, which is even more amazing that I don't remember anyone's names. Yeah. but yeah, I went into this blind. My excitement for this was that I knew that it had a very large fandom. Mm-hmm. Knew that there was a lot of people who, you know, thought highly of the show. And I've been a fan of Castlevania, which is on Netflix. And it's the same studio that did that. Because the level of action in that was just so, so good. So I was excited to see that in the series. I was rather disappointed, because it seemed like what they did was they took this 80s TV show and they just remastered it. Because, yes, it was detailed, but there was no crazy choreography. It was kind of the same action stuff. There was nothing like too like mind-blowing about the way that it looked. I guess it's good that they took the characters and kept them how they looked from their original design. But at the same time, like, with what I expected of it from the Castlevania studio, it didn't blow my mind, really. And okay. In regards to story-wise, like, I really enjoyed the first episode because the first episode felt like a series finale of something. So it was totally put in a way where I felt like the people who enjoyed the series beforehand would have enjoyed this episode because it had the context and you could just dive right into it. So if I hadn't listened to that primer, I'd have been really confused about a lot of things, but it did help me on that first episode. But like mm-hmm. I said, it like that one felt like a story of its own, but it felt like it needed context. Mm. And somebody who went in blind might have been a little confused of like, what do all these words and importances mean? So sure. I enjoyed the first episode having my bit of context. I enjoyed the last episode because there was a lot of oh snap moments. But
totally,
when I am watching something for the first time, I don't like touching my phone. From episodes 2 to 4, I picked up my phone quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. I think
that's fair. I'll be interested to hear what it was specifically about, you know, episodes 2 through 4 that maybe kind of lost you in terms of the storytelling. But as far as the action goes and the animation studio that you brought up, I believe it was Powerhouse. So I've seen the first season of Castlevania, and it's been a few years since that came out. So I definitely need to see the subsequent seasons. I only hear the best things about it. It's another one that you've recommended to me. But thinking back on that first season, I think it was a little bit more of a slow burn, as I recall, and I think the action was kind of held off until the end. But it is interesting to hear you make those comparisons to, you know, you said it felt like a season finale. And I, even as somebody that's only watched, you know, like maybe 13, 14 episodes of He-Man, the classic series, it really did feel like one of those classic episodes in a lot of ways. Yeah. And it did feel like the series finale of that series in a way. And to its credit, that's where the show really succeeds to me, because it was touted as being, you know, the continuation of this classic series. And the series is called Masters of the Universe Revelation. So in that regard, that's just kind of where it works for me. Yeah, you do have this title character of He-Man, and I can understand why, you know, long-term fans, if He-Man is your favorite character, why you might have been upset, you know, with these 5 episodes, with him not being around. But it is called Masters of the Universe, so for me, it was just great to, you know, see Teela get to step into the spotlight. There were a few choice episodes that we covered in our primer where we talked about some of the shortcomings of that 80s series, as awesome as it was, and as a great a job as it did, as putting capable female characters at the forefront, there always was kind of that weird context of Teela being the only one not in on the secret. And in that mm-hmm. regard, I thought it made sense for her to be upset. And I'm just talking about some of the conversations that are going on out there. Like, that's one of the things I've heard people not really be satisfied, that it's kind of out of the character of Teela to react like that and kind of be emotional, and they see it as immature. But for me, it worked. I mean, and yeah, go ahead.
To me, that's a woman being that's a woman responding to having been gaslit for the last however many years. And I love that part of it, because I the way you two are talking about the first episode really clicks for me, and because I think it's part of why the 5th episode disappointed me so much, and somewhat the 3rd and 4th, is it felt to me like it was a season finale. It felt to me like it was a series finale. It was kind of saying,
sure,
because for most of episode 1, I was like, this is just an episode with better animation. I have no idea why I'm watching this. Until I got to those last 5 minutes and I realized, oh, they're trying to basically say the old series is done. This is the end of the old series. Now we're doing something fundamentally new. And I was so here for, I thought that was such a brilliant way of doing it, even if you could have cut 10 minutes of the boring, exactly like an old episode stuff out.
Sure.
Especially because, I mean, just a small thing, Teela got to wear pants. Evil-Lyn got to wear pants. Like, She-Ra as well, and as one of the things people hated about the new She-Ra as well, you know, these were shows that were kind of like the defining ideas of bikini armor in a lot of ways, you know?
Okay.
Teela was a warrior for whom the idea that her thighs could ever be attacked by a sword was just not non-comprehensible, because that and her cleavage were always fully exposed. And both the fact that, like, in the 2nd episode, it was women talking about their lives after the men in their lives had gone on, Skeletor and He-Man. Like, I thought that was... Yeah, I know that there's some critique of the show based on that kind of stuff. The people who are like, why wasn't He-Man there? This is wrong for Teela. To me, that I kind of wish I loved the show more just so I could argue with those people. Because I'm like, the show had bad problems, but none of that was it. Like, I thought what they did with Teela was honestly one of the things I liked most.
Okay, I'll add on to that as the person who never watched the original series. Like, that seems like a reasonable response to... I mean, like, you're in front of the king and queen, and they were like, oh, by the way, your son is dead along with our protector. And, like, she... my understanding is that she, like, grew up with him. Like, they've known each other for a really long time, and he's kept this secret from someone that he fought with in all these battles. Like, yeah, that's... you find that out after he died, too. Like, that's a big deal. And then the Man of Arms was her father, right?
Yeah.
Man at Arms, yeah.
Man at Arms. Okay, so the thing that you've been busting your ass for multiple years to protect has finally been destroyed or taken over or whatever. Your kingdom is about to fall. Your father just got exiled. Your best friend is dead. The person you've been fighting with for... like, yes, that's a reasonable response. Why would she not be mad? Like, it's if she has this persona of not showing emotion, like, yeah, that's what a good warrior does, but, like, emotional order of thinking, like, there's a time and place for everything, and of course she's gonna snap at this point, and she's not gonna have her moment to, like, you know, fully blow up, because why would she not? Like, granted, she still wants to, like, work with people to, like, save the little guy and this and that, but I don't blame her for having the response that she did.
Sure. I also watched that wondering if Kevin Smith was being a little bit meta, because he's been somewhat involved with The Flash, the TV show in the DC Arrowverse.
Right,
Which I think is a very good show, but it's also gotten very rightly critiqued, and Kevin Smith has talked about, like, acknowledging this critique and being aware of it, that... The show did a really awful job of straight up gaslighting Iris West, the girlfriend of Barry Allen, who's also the Flash, and that one of the people who's most involved with her gaslighting in a really painful way is her own father. And to me, there was such a strong parallel there, that knowing that Kevin Smith was deeply involved with both, like,
interesting.
He only directed a couple of episodes of The Flash, but, you know, he was very connected to it, and I know he was very aware of that critique of it. Yeah. It felt to me like, even if it was only subconscious, that had to be in the back of his mind somewhere. Because, yeah, I think that was, to me, that was one of the biggest problems of the show originally, and this addressed that and fixed it, which I really liked.
To add on to another point that you brought up, not to go too much into, like, real life, but how do I want to word this? With the progressive, inclusive world that we live in today, when I noticed that the show was called Masters of the Universe and He-Man wasn't in it, I was like, there's going to be a lot of people getting the spotlight in this show. It's not going to be just about him. And spoilers, when he died in the first episode, I was like, called it? I feel like I've been hitting the nail on this for someone who hasn't seen the original show. Like, I'm going to toot my own horn for a second. I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
So let's get to one of the things that I know has been pretty controversial. If you don't mind, I'm kind of taking over the hosting. You're hosting. You're doing the editing. I'm just going to throw out one question.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Hey, fun fact, Matthew Fox has a couple of shows, in case you didn't know that.
Because I know this has been a controversial point among a number of people. Like I said, it's why Paul Hoppe, my often co-host, literally stopped watching the show. And I had a very different reaction to it, but also a pretty negative one. What did you think of us getting to have a real connection with Orko's character and then him sacrificing himself?
Well, that just goes to show that we're both, hosts of podcasts, because that was the natural place that I was going as well. I wanted to bring up Orko and some of the character sacrifices there. But I think you kind of mentioned that this sacrifice didn't work for you and your friend Paul Hoppe. I'll call him a friend of the show because it's only a matter of time before we have him on the show to discuss Cowboy Bebop for sure. Anyway, it was a sacrifice that really worked for me. Again, when I watched the classic show, I tried to put myself into that headspace of being a kid, and I tried to think about the characters that would have really resonated with me as a kid, and Orko was certainly one of those characters. I've heard the conversations out there about people that have been Masters of the Universe fans for a long time, and it sounds like Orko is one of those characters that's a little bit, he's kind of like C-3PO meets Jar Jar Binks for the Star Wars fans there, where there are people that you either love him or you hate him, and I definitely think I would have been one of those people that loved him, and I do love him. And for me, the sacrifice just really did work, and it was one of the most emotional moments for the show for me, and I thought it was entirely effective, and the character was set up well for it. It worked not only for his character, but it also worked for Evil Lynn, as well as for Teela. Zuhair, what did you think about Orko as somebody that didn't have that familiarity and the way he functioned in this show? And you can even talk about a little bit about the vocal performance there if you want.
I didn't not like him.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't crazy about him either. He was okay. Kind of like he was a neutral character for me. The vocal performance did really give me the hint of they're trying to honor the original essence of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to listen to. It was very charismatic. He did a good job at what it was going for. But as somebody who didn't watch, I don't think there was enough build-up and development of that character for me to be, like, emotional when he sacrificed himself. It was an awesome scene because I loved Scareglow. I don't know why I was so obsessed with him. And him having his moment of being weak and people, you know, thinking that he wasn't good enough and having his moment of, like, I'm the boss. I don't know what I'm quoting it from, but it was a cool moment. I liked it. Seeing, like, those big rings, I was like, what's the point of these rings? He's walking through, and then you realize it's a trap, and it's actually, like, these cuffs and stuff. I was like, oh, okay, that's actually pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So it was a cool moment for him, but I didn't, you know, sit up at the edge of my seat or go, oh, no, this is happening. I was like, all right, I think he's about to die.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. I was very neutral towards him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew, why don't you tell us a little bit about why exactly it didn't work for you?
Sure.
Let me grab my popcorn.
So, and this is kind of a larger rant to have about a lot of things. I'll admit it's a big part of why I really didn't like the TV show Loki. I feel like if you're going to have a sacrifice moment, it has to mean something. It has to be believable. And I don't think we need as many sacrifice moments as we get, to be honest. And I'm happy if we take a lot of them out. And kind of the idea of sacrificing Orko to begin with, like, I am one of those who loved the character, but also understood why he was kind of a little annoying. And I felt like here, again, in sort of like letting Teela know the secret and have pants, letting Evil Lynn become a more complicated character outside of Skeletor, another thing which they abandoned in the last episode, but we'll get to that.
Well,
you know, they finally let, we'll definitely talk about her.
Sure.
You know, they finally let Orko, like, have some real agency and some real power.
Yeah.
And so then to immediately sacrifice him felt really, like, just awful writing. But even more importantly, I didn't believe it for a second because I was like, come on, you're not going to actually let him die. And then, so I'm now going to talk about something that I don't think is a spoiler because Kevin Smith said it about the later episodes, but it could sort of be understood as a spoiler. So maybe if you want to, anyone listening, skip ahead for 30 seconds or a minute.
Sure.
Because this was when I was really like, okay, Kevin Smith, I am now like, this is just a dumb thing you did and I'm angry at you. Not angry at him, you know what I mean? But like, you should know better. People wrote into him apparently saying like, how could you kill Orko? And what he said was like, don't these people know how like cartoon shows work? Like, he didn't exactly say that Orko's coming back, but he basically said like, if you know how these shows work, like, of course you know that Orko's not gone forever. And that just made me even angrier because then I was like, okay, so I was right to not be affected by it because the whole point is that it's meaningless and he's not actually dead. So you're both trying to manipulate me but also admitting that it's not actually that because you're going to just say, oops, never mind, he's still alive at the end.
Yeah.
To me, that's just awful.
That's really annoying.
Yeah, like, just don't do that, screenwriters. Don't do that. If someone's going to die, let them die. you know? Or if they're not, like, don't kill off your main character, one of your two main characters in episode 4 of a 6-episode show. I'm not talking about anything in specific here. Yeah, that was my Loki rant. But going back to this, like, it just felt so pointless. It just felt like, oh, screenwriting 101 says I'm supposed to have a big sacrifice here. I know it's not going to mean anything. They know it's not going to mean anything. But some people will be emotionally affected by it, so let's throw it in. And just that just made me feel the whole thing was cheap.
And here's one of the I love listening to Stranded Panda podcasts. But aside from that, like, that's why I've lost my interest in really dwelling in what people say about a film or show. Because I like that genuine conversation of, like, this is what I watched, this is what I got out of it. Before this cast, I didn't realize that somebody had, like, vocally said, like, hey, this character's coming back. Which is fine, because I'm not too hype on the show as it is, but even, like, with the way that Infinity War and Endgame came out, like, they came up with responses to divert us. Like, how hard is it as a person working on a show to just be like, I don't want to answer that question, or this is why we did this to make you feel this way. Like, talk about the content that the person just consumed. Not mm-hmm. what's coming next, not what you wanted to do, not this, not that. Like, focus on the conversation of what you just saw. There's so right. much chatter about what's coming next that nobody learns to live in the moment. That's the mm-hmm. same thing with Loki. Same thing with WandaVision, was that there was so much speculation. I was like, can we talk about how good this scene was? Can we talk about how well this emotion was conveyed? Can we talk about the heartfelt moment of this character? No! Speculation. Like, why can't we just get lost in what we're watching anymore?
Yeah. And to be clear, totally maybe I think I'm totally agreeing with you on that. And to me, this though felt different, because this wasn't about like speculation about what will happen, as much as just like. I guess there's to me a difference between speculating versus just like having seen other things before, you know. And I just couldn't feel any emotional weight to it because it seemed so obvious that of course he wasn't going to be dead.
It's one for us to think that way, because that's just, you know, we watch it and we're just like, I feel like he's going to come back.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But for Kevin Smith to feed into the speculation mindset, and for him to be a creative, to be the person who worked on the show and be so caught up in what's coming next that he told the world that it's like, that way. He fed into it. Like, what's the point of watching the next season now? Like, dude's going to come back and be like, oh, cool, he's back. Sweet.
Yeah. I do kind of want to move on from the spoiler section of this in case there are people that, you know, aren't paying as much attention to that stuff. But what I'll say about Kevin Smith is I am a fan of Kevin Smith, but with that being said, I don't think everything he's done is great. I think there's, you know, some spotty stuff in his body of work, and he definitely has not always handled criticism with the dignity or grace that someone in the public limelight necessarily should. But that's what a lot of people like about him, the fact that he is just very what you see is what you get. He's not going to hold anything back. But in terms of being a showrunner, he probably should have kept some of his tricks up his sleeve a little bit in that regard.
I'll just say something that's non-spoilery, but just also about Kevin Smith.
Sure.
Zuhair, hearing your responses to it as someone who doesn't really know the show as well and some of the parts that lost you, to me that kind of speaks to what I was saying about this show feeling like it was too much nostalgia. And to me the easy contrast is the three of us have been on the Star Wars podcast talking about Bad Batch, and Jay Scotty, there are a number of times where Zuhair, you and I have gotten so excited about things that are references to Clone Wars and like nostalgia like that. Mm-hmm. But Jay Scotty, you've made very clear that you haven't felt kind of lost by that. And I feel like it's a very hard line to walk. I don't think it's easy thing. And I don't think Bad Batch has done it perfectly by any means. But Zuhair, your responses to me really feel a lot like, if you needed the primer to even be able to like really get into it as much as you could, like, that to me is even more sign like the show was leaning too hard on this nostalgia factor instead of really trying to make it something new for new people as well as for old.
Yeah, and that could be contributing to, you know, some of the reception there. And it's kind of difficult for me, you know, having done that primer with people that, you know, are such staunch and diehard fans, and for them to have reacted so positively, it's just kind of it really kind of almost made me have almost like whiplash when I like started to hear about the review bombing and stuff like that. So
What I'll say on that is, so on the episodes you've had Jay Scotty for Bad Batch, which has been a good chunk of them, there's always, every episode of Bad Batch has had a character from, whether it be Clone Wars, Rebels, a movie, whatever. And we always ask Jay Scotty, what did you think of it first, before going in? He has his opinion. But at the end of the day, there hasn't been a character that's popped in that, if you didn't know who he was, it affected the show. It's, if you recognize this person, great. If not, they give enough context to keep the episode going. You don't need to watch all these other things to get it.
Yeah.
With this show of Masters of the Universe, there was moments where the light bulb went off of, okay, I got this from the primer. And then there was a lot of episodes of, I really want to Google this right now. What are these terms that they're saying? What is the importance of this? What is the significance of this? Why am I not... Maybe I'm just going to watch and finish the episode and maybe it'll answer my questions. Like, the episode where he was, like, with the other He-Man, like, the He-Man past or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the champions in Praetorian.
Took me so long to understand who they were and what was going on. And then eventually, instead of calling it whatever it was, they said the word heaven. And that was when I was like, oh, that's what it is. So,
yeah,
I personally didn't get the feel that they were explaining the world. Because I love a good world building.
Sure.
And I didn't feel like they did a strong enough job to build it for people who are coming in blind. If what you said, Matthew, about it being a season finale for the series ahead, okay, that makes sense. But in regards to grabbing a new audience, I'm not sure if they would succeed at that mission.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. And I think part of the world building thing is that, I mean, there wasn't much to begin with. Like, this is all based on a line of toys that had, you know, some world building written on the back of the boxes. And then a TV show that was, you know, a kid's show in the 80s that no one was going deep into the world building. And I think, again, not to hold up She-Ra as the shining example, but there's other examples of remakes too. I think some other shows were willing to sort of say, okay, well, there really isn't much depth here. Let's go deeper. Let's create some of our own lore that is taking what's in the original and running with it. And I felt that's one thing this didn't do. You know, it tried to just do like, oh, look, here's Eternia. If you remember the show, you remember it's a kind of heaven-like thing. But you're right, there was no sort of there. They didn't really go deeper beyond the surface. They just expected you to remember the surface from 30 years ago.
I have a question, and I feel like when I ask this, you guys are going to understand my next question that comes up. What's the history of Skeletor like? Like, was he always this goofy, sarcastic, giddy type of villain?
Well, that's a good opportunity, to kind of talk about, you know, Mark Hamill's performance as well and what he brought to the table there. But in terms of my exposure to Skeletor, my understanding is he's never really given all that much of a backstory other than the fact that he wants He-Man's power. Like, he is the antithesis to He-Man. Is there really that much more to him, Matthew?
Not that 8-year-old me ever noticed.
Okay.
And again, 8-year-old me wasn't looking for nuance.
Yeah, I'm kind of asking just about, like, his personality and his, like, demeanor and, like...
Well, yeah.
Like, was he always, like a goofy, silly, like, ha-ha-ha type of person?
Oh, his laugh is iconic. His laugh is... Alan Oppenheimer doing that laugh as Skeletor, that is definitely okay. a cackling and a iconic part of Skeletor. Yeah. As far as the one-liners and stuff like that go, there was one that I really liked in episode 3, I believe it was, The Most Dangerous Man in Eternia. Yeah, because they opened the episode with a flashback to He-Man and Teela on the Crystal Sea having been taken captive by Skeletor, Evil Lyn, and I believe Merman, voiced by Kevin Conroy. So it was kind of great to get Skeletor, voiced by Mark Hamill, with Merman as Kevin Conroy in the same scene there. But anyway, the one-liner that was delivered is once He-Man and Teela are cast in the ocean, Skeletor says something like, "I look forward to our next battle, but I won't hold my breath." I was like, okay.
Yeah, I don't remember the goofiness in the puns as much, but I think I think any adult who was watching it with me would have probably found Skeletor, like, you know, at six, I thought he was terrifying. I think any adult watching would have thought he was pretty goofy. And it definitely felt like they leaned more into that with this. Mm-hmm. But Paul made the comment, I think a couple others have said, like, Mark Hamill is an amazing voice actor.
Yeah.
He did wonderful things with the Joker, and then he also, like, really stretched to, like, do very different voices. This felt kind of like pretty much the Joker, you know? Like,
totally fair.
Yep, you went exactly what I was getting at, because seeing the design of Skeletor, he looks terrifying. I thought there was going to be more dialogue of, like, showing that menacing... Because when Scareglow came up, I was like, that's the type of voice I expected for Skeletor. Like, this... I'm loving this dude. He looks terrifying. He fits his persona perfectly.
Yeah, Scareglow was Tony Todd.
All I heard was Joker.
Okay.
And I was wondering if that was, like, actually the essence of the character, and you guys were like, okay, this fits perfectly, as somebody who's seen it before, or if it was just me going, like, yeah, these two don't mix together. And I guess, like, it did amp up, like, the hard-hitting moments. Like, when Skeletor ended up stabbing He-Man, I was like, oh, God. Because when it went to, like, witty goofy in this and that, and then, like, Mark Hamill changed his voice to be a little more menacing on "Ha-ha, I finally won." Like, that worked for me. So yeah. I was wondering on y'all's perspective of if the goofy demeanor still worked with this, if it matched up with the source material, and what y'all's thoughts on his performance were.
Yeah, I think it fit the character in terms of him, being kind of the cackling, goofy. He is menacing, but not... He's menacing kind of in the same vein as the Joker, but I will agree with those criticisms. As awesome a performer Mark Hamill is in the range that he's got, it really did just kind of remind me of the Joker in a lot of ways. And I know, Mark Hamill has a ton of voices at his disposal. Skips is coming to mind if anybody's watched the regular show, but it always kind of, like, surprises people when I bust out that fact that he voiced the Yeti Skips from the regular show. But, and comparing him to somebody like Scareglow, I kind of cut in when you were talking there, but that was Tony Todd. And Tony Todd has a long-standing history of voicing villains similarly. And I guess what benefits Tony Todd a little bit is, like, he's kind of doing the same voice he always does as well, but it's just never been attached to quite an iconic character like the Joker. Right. So you're not going to make those comparisons the same way. But I would agree with you in terms of, like, just talking about the character of Skeletor and where they took him, especially in those final moments. Seeing him take the power of Grayskull and loom over Castle Grayskull as Skele-God was a hell of a cliffhanger for me, and definitely got me excited to see the next five episodes.
I think for me, part of why I was disappointed by it was, because, like, Skeletor never meant anything. I mean, like I said, he was scary to me as a six-year-old, but, you know, we've often talked about how, like, a show like Batman the Animated Series is great if you're six, but also great if you're 16 or 36. Maybe I think some of the hardcore Marvel, hardcore MO2U fans are going to disagree with me here. I don't think that's true of He-Man. I think He-Man is a show that is great when you're 6 or 7 or 10 or 12. And maybe there's some fun nostalgia, but I don't imagine too many adults are going to go back and watch the original and love it. I think Skeletor was written at a time when, like, you didn't need a villain with a compelling backstory. They just wanted all the power and an evil laugh, and that was enough.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, though, they did introduce a really compelling villain. They introduced this idea of, if you played Mage of the Ascension, they basically introduced the technocracy. They introduced these, like, it was funny, because religious zealots, but religious zealots about technology, because of the idea of the technology to sort of overcome magic. And to me, there's a really fascinating story there, and I was so ready for that to be our main villains for most of the rest, for the next five episodes. And so when they kind of got just shunted to the side, and it's like, nope, we're back to Skeletor, you're right, that scene was powerful, but I was also just like, oh, okay, so we are going back to the show from the 80s. That's disappointing.
I can see those criticisms, and they're valid as well, because as much as this is supposed to be a continuation and the next phase of the Masters of the Universe story and the story of Eternia, you do kind of get that feeling that it's going to kind of go back to that classic thing that I think some of the people that have been yelling the loudest, it's kind of what they want to see. It's going to be that classic He-Man versus right. Skeletor, just with a new, what's the word I'm looking for? Just basically a new finish. Everything's going to be a little bit shinier, a little bit better animated, and the performances will be a little bit better. But I did want to talk about some of the supporting performances. So you brought up the Techno Cult there. That was Henry Rollins as Triclops, who I thought did a great job. But I thought Liam Cunningham as Master at Arms was also a pretty good standout for me. And then mm-hmm. Tiffany Smith as Andra. It's kind of funny. She has been in the YouTube space for a long time, so there were a few channels that covered movie news and stuff like that that I was a fan of for a long time that she popped up on, and it's just been interesting to follow her career and then see her appear in something as big as this, and I thought she did a great job.
Yeah, I thought the acting was fantastic. Lena Headey especially, I thought was just so perfect for Eva Lynn. Like I said, I loved Eva Lynn for 4.5 episodes.
Yeah, I feel bad for leaving her out. Yeah, Lena Headey was great.
Yeah. Should we get into her? J. Scott, it sounded like you liked her turning back to being a villain at the end.
Well, I think there's more to be seen there. I think as much as, you know, she talked about in the first episodes, stepping out of the shadow of Skeletor and her realizing that she could be a master of the universe, I think that storyline is not going away, and that we are going to see her not necessarily be as subservient to Skeletor as she has in the past. I think we're going to see her be a little bit more manipulative and just kind of use Skeletor for a period of time. And she might even end up being like the ultimate big bad, which would be pretty cool. But I felt like Zuhair was going to say something as well.
It was more of the two Game of Thrones actors, Master of Arm and Evelyn.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We've said on the show plenty of times, like, I'm the one who just watches and tries to tune out outside world stuff, and J. Scotty really gets into who the voice actor is and all the people who roll up in the credits. So I was trying so hard not to Google it. And just listening, I was like, man, this voice is so familiar. And hearing the voice of Cersei as a villain in that, and then a villain in this, like, it was flawless casting. They did a really good job with that. They did a great job with Master of Arms. Overall, in regards to the character, like, yeah, it just seems like the right-hand man of the villain, and it was, like, again, like, I don't know too much of the source material, but it was interesting to see her arc and starting to realize, like, how much of a tool she was in regards to, like, actually having her own ambitions as a sorceress. And I thought there was going to be a twist at the end. And I still feel like the second part of this, like, she's going to turn against Skeletor in some sort of way. She seems to have had enough moments with Teela to just start developing her own identity. I don't really have too much to say on the character. Like, I enjoyed her performance. Aside from the confusion of what was going on in the show. I did like when she was on screen. I liked her commentary for everything. I liked the banter of, do we trust her because she's worked with Skeletor for so long? And right. Then when they almost did hash it out before Prince Adam broke it up, like, it was good character. I think it was the most character development we've had throughout the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys mentioned Teela, like, not being the emotional person, so I didn't quite have that backstory to go off of, but in regards to, like, what I've seen in 5 episodes, I think she got the most character development than anybody else.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, same here.
And I hear what you're saying about Eva Lynn might still having a lot of character development to go, and I think there's some power to that. I honestly probably won't watch, so you'll have to tell me how it goes. because I just was so disappointed by it, especially because Eva Lynn had been so tied into Orko's story in terms of the two of them connecting that I felt like for her, it just was one more way of cheapening the sacrifice that he made, because I felt like that was a thing more than anything that would have had a real effect on her. So it just, more than anything, it felt like we wanted to get, granted He-Man's dead, but clearly, I mean, if you think He-Man is going to stay dead, like they're not going to resurrect him a second time, I have a lot of bridges to sell you. And that has nothing to do with anything Kevin Smith has ever said. That's just like, I've watched movies.
Sure.
But like, I don't know. It just felt like, okay, so the next five, don't worry. We went on this crazy journey. We explored these other things, but don't worry. Now we're back to real He-Man, and it's going to be He-Man and Skeletor, and Skeletor is much more powerful than before. And maybe Eva Lynn will not be by his side the whole time, but you'll still get a lot of classic He-Man and Teela and Duncan going up against Skeletor and Eva Lynn. And they told me they weren't going to do that. And then, so now getting back to it, I'm just like, well then, why didn't you just tell me that in episode one, so I would have stopped watching and not wasted the last four episodes? You know, it just felt fundamentally disappointing to me. I think Eva Lynn was the character I liked most, because I thought her, to me, there's a very interesting thing where it's not like a Catra or Zuko, like, I was wrong, I need to do better. It was, the things that I am doing are going to cause, like, you know, the end of the universe. That's not good. I want to stop that. The only way I can stop that is by teaming up with these people. And I don't know, it just felt like she'd gone on, and then while she's doing that, like, yes, she had some growth, but she was still, you know, pretty cruel and callous, but also was learning. And it just felt like all that went out the window when Skeletor came back. And particularly for, like, the fact that so much of it was about Teela and her both realizing, like, what being in the shadow of the men in their lives had been, it just felt like such a step backwards in a way that I was just like, okay, well, if then you're not going to give us an interesting show, so I'm done.
Well, I was going to say it'll be interesting to see where you land when we're able to do a follow-up episode on the final five episodes of the season, but it sounds like you might just they might have lost you, which I mean, I understand the criticisms, I do, but I don't know. I am excited to see where the series goes, and I think they did a good enough job as a casual fan to renew my interest in just the franchise, and I'll definitely be tuning in to see what happens. And in terms of us, you know, the three of us here, I think we all kind of landed a little bit differently. I think I'm a little bit more positive. Matthew, you sound like you're a little more negative, rightly so. That's okay. And then Zuhair's kind of somewhere in the middle. But what I want to highlight here is, like, we've been able to have this conversation and it hasn't turned into an argument. Like, not to, like, preach or tell people what to do or anything like that. It'd just be nice in the online space if you could just see more of that, you know. Talk about the things you like, talk about the things you don't like, talk about why they didn't work for you, and you don't need to take it so personally. It's content that is meant to provide entertainment and discussions, and it doesn't need to come to, you know, need to be the end of a relationship or anything like that. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. But with that being said, I think we'll kind of bring things to a close here. So did either of you have any final thoughts that you wanted to say about Masters of the Universe Revelation or anything He-Man Masters of the Universe?
Well, if you're trying to close the door, I'm going to put my foot in the door for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
What is Roboto's origin? Is it somebody else whose, like, personality was put in a robot, or was he a robot all along?
I have no idea.
Okay, I think he played more of a role in the toy line based on the research I did and the exposure I did, but having him pop up in these episodes did make me go back, and I watched his origin in the classic 1980s series as well as in the 2002 Mike Young series, and he has very different origins in both of those, so I think it's kind of up for debate there. In the classic series, he was a robotic alien that crash-landed on Eternia, and they discovered his ship and kind of brought him back too, and he was brought into the fold. And then in the 2000 series, he was more of like a chess-playing machine that focused on strategy, and then he always desired to kind of be able to use those strategies actually on the field. But in this series, we got, you know, through dialogue, we found that this version of Roboto seems to be based on the brain patterns of a young Duncan, who's our master at arms. So he's kind of like his surrogate son in that regard.
Okay. I really liked his character. He's like arguably my favorite.
He was another one that got to, sacrifice was a big theme of these first five episodes, and he's certainly not lost there. I thought Justin Long did great.
But yeah, him ending up like being the Forge Master and like him being the one to bring the swords together, and that whole sequence of coming up with the idea to lock in the throne room and turn it into the forge and put it together, and like you seeing like on his display of critical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is like the most. Well, that and He-Man getting stabbed was probably the most like, oh, this is interesting moments in the show for me.
He had the moment of like, oh, I am feeling kind of human because now I'm afraid to die, right?
Yes.
Okay. I will say he was absolutely one of my favorite parts, especially because I've been watching a lot of Star Trek recently, The Next Generation. And so that little moment where he had where he, you know, they're all sad that he's dying, but he says it's kind of a lovely moment that he's afraid of death, which is a distinctly human feeling for him. I don't know if it says human or just kind of being alive, but it just gave me so many flashes to Data and other characters who, like androids, who've wanted to be able to be human and be alive. And I thought that was a very nice touch. And to me, definitely one of the most emotionally powerful moments that really paid off.
Yeah.
It made me think of Robot from Invincible a little bit. But oh, okay. I took that scene a little differently because, you know, he talks about, like, how he doesn't feel and doesn't have emotion and he can't. Like, somebody. I forgot the dialogue exactly, but I remember really liking it, like, someone explaining it. He's like, oh, that's what that feels like. That's good to know. Like, he just has, like, this intel now. But when he was, like, having his moment and he was like, oh, I feel fear now. I was like, oh, you feel him? Oh, that's dark. I'm so sorry. That's the first one you feel before you die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, I wish you could have felt like happiness or like, you know, comfort that people were there. But no, you were just like emotion, fear, panic attack, gone.
he kind of comes full circle in saying that he feels fear. He realizes that he feels and that he's a miracle. So I think that was his final thought. At least that's what I like to take away with it. No, so it's not quite so dark.
I took that as a very dark moment. Like, I am so sorry you went out that way.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it was definitely a poignant sacrifice.
I guess my final point would be kind of going back to what you said, Jay Scotty. I think you're completely right. I really appreciate what you guys have done with this podcast, and for bringing me on as a guest. And for full context, I specifically reached out to you two and said, hey, listen, I know we talked about me being on the show. I really didn't like this new version. If you want to get someone else, like, you know, please go ahead and do so. I don't want to be a negative Nancy. And I've tried to talk about the things I liked about it, but I know I've had some pretty impassioned feelings about the negative. And I just think it was awesome. You guys were both like, no, of course, we want to have you on. Let's get some different perspectives. And because I think you're right. I think we can definitely have fandom is a lot better when we can recognize that, yeah, like most opinions on these things are completely valid and it's okay to disagree. And my not liking it, I don't think anyone's wrong for liking it. I'm glad that this brought you joy. It didn't bring me joy, and I'll talk about why, but I don't ever think anyone's wrong. And I kind of couch that a little bit because I think the thing is, like, we can all agree on that. And then we can also agree that, like, if you didn't like this because you didn't want the woman to have speaking parts or you wanted the women to have more sexy armor or, like, and then no, you're toxic and garbage and you have no place in fandom.
Right.
Like, I have no problem saying that. But yeah, when it's actually people who are, like, appreciating the show and who want the show to be, you know, about these kind of, you know, the shows in the 80s did not reflect the world we lived in the 80s and certainly don't reflect the world today. And so we're making efforts to explore the world, to have these shows reflect more of the world today. And if you're against that, I really don't care what your opinion is. But anything else, yeah, I think it's awesome that Jay Scotty liked it so much. And Zuhair, I really appreciated hearing your thoughts as someone who hadn't really known the show and what you liked and what you didn't like. And I think this conversation gives me more of an appreciation for the show, even if it doesn't necessarily change my own feelings on it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Very, very well said. And yeah, in terms of just, I kind of skirted around the toxicity just because I almost don't want to highlight it, but it is worth bringing up. There is a lot of toxicity out there and it's just not warranted at all. Like, if you have that much free time and that much, and again, I guess I shouldn't be coming from like me standing on and speaking down to anybody like that, but I would just say, you know, check your motivations if you've got that much anger over an animated series based on a toy line.
Well, let's face it, too. Let's just be grateful that we actually do have, like, new content coming back and things to watch again and being able to talk to people about it again. So,
certainly.
Yeah, count your blessings when you can, my friends.
I'm definitely in a place of the amount of content that I want to cover and the amount of hours I have to cover it are no longer matching up, which is frustrating, but also, a nice problem to have.
All right. Well, I thank both of you for coming on and providing your thoughts and taking the time to watch the show and joining me here today. Tell the people what you have going on. What would you like to broadcast or plug there? Matthew?
Sure. I would just say, as mentioned, I do two podcasts, the Star Wars Universe podcast and Superhero Ethics. You can find both of those on, I think, pretty much every podcatcher. You can also find all of my podcasts at theethicalpanda.com. The Ethical Panda is kind of the nom de plume I use on the internet for podcasting stuff. And so if you want to find me, I'm under that name on both Twitter and Facebook. Those are great ways to give me feedback, give me thoughts. You can also email me at theethicalpanda@gmail.com. I've been going on Twitch a lot more. I'm now taking a week break. For those of you, I'm not sure when this will be published, but I'm going to take a break the first week of August. I'll be back the second week of August. If you just go to The Ethical Panda on Twitch, hit subscribe, or follow, or whatever it is. Subscribe is better. Throw me a little cash, but or just follow. You'll know once I start updating my schedule. What I've been doing is I'm playing poker and talking a little bit about poker, but also kind of talking about whatever's on my mind that day of these kind of subjects. I've talked about Loki, time travel, queer representation and things, Masters of the Universe, billionaires going into space. And more than anything, it's a very interactive thing. We get people in the chat, you make comments, conversation, I'll just keep the dialogue going with you, and we'll just have a fun time. So please check that out on Twitch and check out my podcasts and just check out all the other awesome things that these folks are doing on Animation Liberation and the rest of the Panda Network.
Right on. Thank you. Zuhair?
Well, we have the ball rolling on our Demon Slayer coverage. Just have a little bit of scheduling issue, which is why it hasn't come out as soon as I would have liked. But Season 2 does roll out. The movie is available for purchase and streaming on Funimation right now. So the hype train of talking about this great anime is finally back up. And I'm excited to share that excitement with you all.
Yeah, the hype train for Mugen Train. And you guys already did your Mugen Train episode, so that's available on the feed for people. For myself, I'll just plug my Instagram. It's been a little while since I've plugged it, but I have been, I've had renewed interest there, and I've been putting some more stuff out. I've kind of been doing this series. I've been taking Marvel characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and putting them in the style of, like, Shepard Fairey, who's known for that Obey series. So if you want to follow me there, it's Jay Scotty for real, JSCOTTY, 4, REEL. Look forward to more of those.
I really like that Infinity War Captain America one you did.
Oh, thanks. That was partially inspired by Katie Rose Button, friend of the network. She saw my Doctor Strange one and asked for... she wanted the one where he steps out of the shadows when he's first introduced in Infinity War, but I had a hard time finding an image that was high quality enough. But that's neither here nor there. I also do want to remind people, we do want to incorporate your feedback into the show. This was originally intended to be a feedback episode, so we've got the stinger at the end of the episode that gives you the email address, but one more time, it's animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com, and also, it's been a while since we've gotten a review, so that'll definitely help the show grow. We've gotten some more new listeners as we've done He-Man and Masters of the Universe coverage, so if you do like what we're doing here, let us know and help the show grow. Much appreciated. Keep tuning in. That's TOONIN.
Stay whelmed.
Roger, roger.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.
Of Marvel characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe that's funny. I'm just, like, forced to have it want to say the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast.